KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to a bonus episode of The Treatment. I'm producer Jenny Radelet. The Nick takes us to New York City at the turn of the 20th century, specifically to the hurried halls of Manhattan's Knickerbocker Hospital. Clive Owen stars as Dr. John Thackeray, the incredibly talented but troubled head of surgery. We follow his ambition and addiction over the course of 10 episodes, all directed by Steven Soderbergh. Recently, Soderbergh and Clive Owen joined Elvis Mitchell on stage at Film Independent at LACMA to talk about their latest project. Here's their conversation.
So, Steve, let me ask you, how far after Contagion did this come, the conversation about doing this? Because it's kind of the logical companion piece to that.
Well, this happened, I saw the script for the first episode a year ago, May. We were on our way to Cannes with Behind the Candelabra. So there wasn't any direct connection, and this was kind of an accident. I, as some of you may know, I was supposed to be on sabbatical.
Oh, is that true? I don't know if we'd heard that or not yet.
I got lit up, and I knew that I was the first person to see it. And I knew the second person to see it would get lit up. And so we made the move, and we moved very quickly. We contacted Clive immediately, sent him the script, and he responded very quickly. And so early June, we sort of got the go-ahead, and that left us 3 months to write 9 episodes and prep that. Because we started shooting in September, so it all happened very fast.
And Clive, what was your first conversation with Steven like about after you saw the script?
Well, it was one of those sort of moments. Steven called me and talked to me about it, and I have to be honest, I wasn't sure about, I love Steven and I wanted to work with Steven desperately, but I wasn't sure about committing to 10 hours of television. It wasn't something I was thinking about. I was sitting on a trailer shooting something else. I started to think, I'll look at the first few pages, see what the feel of this thing is. And 40 minutes later, I knew I had to do it. It was such brilliant writing. And so I had a very similar reaction to Steven. And then we got on the phone and talked with the two writers about where it was going to go and how to, you know, just give me a bit of an insight into how the 10 hours would track. And it was clear that the guys had done so much research and were so passionate and intelligent and informed about the period and the world that the thing was set that it was just hugely exciting. And to be fair to them, we did have a time pressure. We only had, you know, a certain amount of months to write the scripts, and I was convinced that we'd probably be waiting for a few scripts once we started shooting. It felt like that kind of scenario. But they delivered 10 impeccably, beautifully written scripts that were all of the same standard, if not better than that first one.
And I guess I wonder, because of the size of the cast, you had a chance to sit and do a table read, let people get familiar with their characters, because it looks like maybe that didn't get a chance to really happen here.
No, what, Carmen, 256 speaking roles? You showed up on set day one. That everybody just had to jump into the deep end. But it's as long as everybody is playing the same game. You know, you look at anything. If you're going to make the good version of something, it's sort of a zero sum game. You're starting with the number 100, and then every time you make a decision that isn't the right decision, you start to deduct numbers from 100. And in this case, every call that we made in terms of the people that we brought in, this, you know, HBO and Cinemax, everything had to go right, and it felt like it did. I never felt like I was doing anything but focusing on the piece. I didn't have to deal with any sort of politics. I didn't have to deal with anything except getting it. And that's rare.
Well, I've seen 7 episodes, I was telling you, Clive, and what's fascinating to watch about Thackeray is that half the time he's possessed. I mean, it's almost like half the time he's taking those drugs to sort of like tamp down all this mental activity that's going on. It's not so much even to kill off that horrible sort of pain he's suffering, but he seems like his mind is just going all the time. Is that the way the character felt to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because when we first started talking with Stephen about it, Stephen said to me, you know, we're not going to shoot this episodically. This is a 10-hour movie, and I want to sort of block it out like that. And I thought, wow, that's a great way of looking at it, you know, and I thought, that's fine. Every movie you shoot is out of sequence. That's not such a big deal until it got close to shooting. And I thought, how the hell am I going to carry 10 hours of this character in my head the whole time? And when I talked to Stephen and the writers, we'd gone in when they were having, I'd sort of gate-crashed a little brainstorming session they were having, and I saw this big whiteboard where they were playing around with scenes and sort of shaping the thing. And I had to steal that idea and just have a sort of whiteboard of every episode and every scene, because I needed a visual to carry the whole thing. And, you know, I'm playing a guy he's a drug addict. So it's not just, you know, every scene and the relationships within that scene. It's where is he on that graph? You know, is he in need? Has he had too much? Is he desperate for more? Is it, you know, and I needed a visual thing because we were moving so quickly and carrying so much to sort of, you know, I had to use that to get myself through it, really.
So you did shoot like a movie, shooting out a sequence, and how tough was that to do? Because, again, you've got all this material, and as people will see when they see some of the upcoming episodes, there's a lot going on in quite a few of those episodes.
I think, honestly, it was harder for the cast than it was for me. It's what I'm used to, and I can only imagine, you know, for instance, so we shoot all of the scenes in your apartment in 2 days.
Oh, my God.
And it's a lot of material, and there's a lot of the emotional trajectory has to track, you know, throughout the 10 episodes. So that, I think, was much more of a burden on the cast than it was on me. I was relying on them to a great degree to have a sense of you know, what, and for Clive especially, how many revolutions per minute he should be playing in a given scene, and we would talk about that. And I very quickly, we just sort of fell into the rhythm of the shoot, you know?
We're all just running up, keeping up with this guy, he's lying. It's like, Stephen sets a very, very high bar, and what's brilliant about a set that Stephen's on is that you walk on, and from the minute you start, there's an incredible focus and attitude about the day's work, and it's, you know, I found it very, very demanding, but at the same time, hugely rewarding, because this guy is so on top of his game in all aspects that, as he says, that what he loved about it was just being able to focus on catching it. It's the same for actors, that ultimately what you're worrying about is just what you're doing, and you've got such an incredible sound support system around you that even though it's challenging and demanding because of the pace you're moving and because of what's being demanded each day, the huge sort of privilege when you come out the other side of it is all I was really sweating about is what I was supposed to be, which is a great place to be.
Yeah, because one of the things that's so remarkable about this character is he speaks really quickly and is throwing off a lot of information. I was just exhausted watching you go through some of these scenes. I don't know how you were able to keep all that stuff in your head. How did you do it?
It's all about, you know, working at, you know, on something like this for that length of time. It's about plotting. You know, you look at, there were breathers throughout. There were some very, very intense periods. You know, operation scenes had big circles around them for me because I found them the most challenging, because you've got the technical aspect. What are we doing physically? What is the operation? What are we doing? The rhythm of the scene is dictated by what the operation is and how that's moving and how that's working. You've got the interaction with the doctors and the nurses, which is a separate thing from the playing to the audience who are observing the operation. And so I found those particularly kind of challenging and daunting scenes, and knew that, you know, it was imperative to be really prepared for those. But it's like, you know, it's the same that's applied to anything that you do. You know, you prepare and you get ready. It's just that it's a very intense version of that process.
It really is. This seems to be in your sweet spot a little bit, Stephen, just because your protagonist is incredibly so obsessed about detail, and it's also about class. I mean, so many things you've done about class and interlopers in a class where they sort of ostensibly don't belong. I just wonder if that's one of the things that you connected with when you read.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it seemed to be about everything that I was interested in, frankly, when I read it. It just had everything. And it was built on the most solid foundation that you can find in television, which is the medical drama. It's the most successful genre in television. And yet the lens that it was being viewed through, I felt like I hadn't seen before. I immediately started thinking in terms of aesthetically how to sort of tear down a bit of the attitude that we tend to have about period pieces. In terms of the style, the music.
Using the contemporary music and those cuts and the handheld.
Thackeray in 1900 in New York is us. He's us. He feels like things are going that fast. That's the sensation he has of being that person. Then I want a contemporary audience to understand that he was at the front of his time the way we all feel now. And what I loved about the script, unlike a lot of period pieces, you see a lot of period pieces and there's, whether it's spoken or unspoken, there's this sense of, wasn't it nicer back then? And your first sensation when you see this is thank God that it's 2014. Like, that's what I, like, right out of the gate, you're like, holy shit. People went in, when you went to the hospital then, the assumption was, you're so sick, you're probably not coming back. And I loved that about it, that it was so casual. People died. And it's just, nobody's really crying or upset because people are dying all the time. And I loved how kind of clean it was in that regard emotionally. And so, again, our job was to just do it within the very specific parameters that were set up for us, which is possible to do if you have creative autonomy on the ground. If you get to solve the problems of the day the way you want to solve them. You know, 9 pages a day, that's a lot, but if you're allowed, as the director, there's a scene in episode 2, the junction box scene where the electricity's not working. It's a 4-page scene, I think. Quite a bit of dialogue, some activity. I'm looking at my watch, I'm like, okay, we have an hour and a half. So we ended up choreographing this very elaborate single take.
Yeah.
Now, so that's how you solve that problem. And as long as you don't have somebody calling you on the phone saying, where's the coverage, you can make your day and come up with good stuff. But you need the freedom to look at it and go, this is how we're going to solve this. So you dole that stuff out. The previa sequence in the beginning of the episode, that was a long day. We did the whole thing in a day. It was 70 setups. And, that needed that approach. I needed all those shots there. But sometimes you don't.
Well, I find myself thinking about, like Fincher saying, the hospital, but also MASH, and even Caleb Carr's The Alienist, which is, was that kind of something you thought about too?
Well, Stephen Katz, who came on board to help write 2 episodes and sort of just be part of the brain trust. Actually, I met him, I worked with him 20 plus years ago. He was the original writer on the adaptation of The Alienist. That's why Greg and I were friends of his, and that's why we brought him in, because he was up to speed. There was no time to educate another person in the world. We had to go. And Katz came in and slipped right into this world very easily. Again, another decision that had to go right.
You talking about how Thackeray is us, but in a lot of ways, he's not us. And I'm thinking about a lot of the racial politics in the show, Clive, and how tough was it to get your head around some of that? Because he's in some ways not the most, how best to put this, progressive thinker. Thank you. Yes.
It was my big concern. I mean, the bottom line is that on other, you know, versions of this show, I would be the progressive, enlightened one who would understand and be ahead of the time. And the reality was is there were no black doctors working in any hospitals in New York at that time. And, you know, the whole notion of this show is that it is based and inspired by real facts and you know, everything in it, the operations, the everything that happens has been inspired by something the guys have read about what was happening in New York in 1900. What was important to me about that relationship is that I wasn't stupidly ignorant. Yes, I'm racist, and I'm racist in those scenes, but it was important that it was, you know, it was contained within the reality of that period, the same way that everybody was, and the same way that there were no, you know, black guys working in the hospitals. And the relationship does develop. It's a very, very tough opening, and it travels in this journey, and things do change, and you see sort of the beauty of doing 10 hours of television is you know, you can do that. But I think it was very, you know, it was important to keep authentic to the period. And, you know, of course, I was treading very carefully when I was reading those scenes and making sure that I felt that they were playable. And it's, you know, it's the one thing when I talk to journalists that comes up straight away, and people are very, very shocked, and they're quite challenged by it, and they say, you know, how can you, almost like, how can you play those scenes? And you say, this is the reality of the period. It's horrible, but it's true. Like, that was how people were. But you'll see as the show develops that it does, thankfully, develop and change.
Well, now we don't have to see it. Thank you. No, because that's interesting, because when that does happen, it's about his respect for science more than anything else. I mean, that seems like an honest kind of...
Well, that's what we talked about when we talked about the one-liners and this stuff with, you know, my thing, and it was something we all talked about, is like, it has to be built on something. It can't just be arbitrary. When he throws things out at people, when he gets up in somebody's grill, or when he's talking to Algernon, it has to be built on something. In this instance, he's saying, this doesn't make economic sense. You know what I'm saying? He's just looking at it from a business standpoint, just going, this doesn't work. It's a bad idea. So it's not just purely, I'm a racist. He's building it off of something that he believes is logical and legitimate. And so I think it's important when you have a character who's that complicated and has this sort of shadow side that you want to keep in balance with the good things that he does. It has to come from somewhere that tracks, you know what I mean? And so those are the discussions we would have where I just said he can't be glib. It has to come from some real belief that's built on his experience. It can't just be like tossing out one-liners. And I felt happy with where we got.
Well, one of the things, again, I want to talk about this a little bit more, because this piece, more than anything you've done, just watching a bunch of stuff get ready for this, it really deals with class, social classes, in a way that you hadn't before. And I was wondering if that was one of the things that really made you want to jump into this, to look at that.
Yeah, just because it was organic to the piece. It wasn't, you couldn't make the piece without addressing these class issues, which as the show develops become even more and more intense and more complex. But again, it's totally organic to, I mean, the show's called The Nick. They're trying to run a hospital. It's a difficult thing to do now, much less, you know, 114 years ago. And wound into it are these issues of class, because of where the hospital is, what's going on in the city. They got 400,000 immigrants flooding New York every year. And this is a hospital that has become known for you know, quote, catering to an immigrant class, and therefore has a certain sort of, you know, has a certain, people look at it a certain way. And yet it's being, the board is run by people who are very wealthy and very class conscious. And you know, you've seen Seven, throughout the end of the year, this really reaches a boiling point, this whole issue of what does this hospital represent, and who are we trying to attract, and at the end of the day, how do we make money? So, yeah, that stuff to me was appealing just because it was wound into the piece itself. It wasn't a piece that was built out of making a statement about class. The class comes out of making a piece about this hospital.
Well, one of the things I feel like, Clive, that really pays off. You play so many guys who are really defined by what they do, and they sort of don't know what to do with themselves when they're not engaged in that thing that defines them. And I wonder if this is something about the character that you really just go click with right away.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging. It's dangerous. It's not easy. You know, you read that first script and you go, what an introduction for a character. You know, this isn't a character who's going to take people by the hand and lead them gently through 1900 world of medicine. This is a character that's going to be very, very difficult, you know, and challenging and sort of abrasive. And that is kind of what's attractive about it, because it's not, you know, it's not about being likable or making things palatable. It's about challenging, and he's a difficult person, and that, you know, but in some ways for me he's redeemed because he's passionate about what he does and what he's trying to do. He's saved people's lives, he's pushed forward the world of medicine, and what he's doing is very, very important, and he's doing it at all costs, and he's moving forward, and there's sort of fallout from that, but ultimately he's redeemed because he's trying to make the world a better place for people, you know. And but there's, you know, there's something exciting and challenging about playing a character that's not easy, that's full of conflict, that you have got to take people through, but it's a bumpy ride.
But again, that aspect of this guy who really, when he's not doing that thing, which at least when he goes to the opium den, he literally doesn't know what to do with himself when he's not got his hands in somebody. And then that sort of thing is something you've done pretty often. Now, I feel that idea of this guy who's possessed by this pursuit of a profession is something that really appealed to you too.
No, for sure, for sure. It was that thing. As I say, I think he's redeemed by that ultimately, that's his drive, that is his passion, and you know, and it's at all costs, really, you know, that he's not... He's, the fallout that happens on the way for him getting there, he's not that, he doesn't care that much about. He's just trying to get to that place. And, you know, you read the books. My character was inspired by a real guy called William Halstead, and there's an amazing book called Genius on the Edge. And, you know, you read the books about those guys, and it was, you know, they were at the front line. That all of those guys were driven people who, you know, were taking huge risks and sort of massive commitment to push things forward, and that's what it takes to change things sometimes.
But I think proficiency is compelling, especially on screen. Like, and it's, I use Day of the Jackal as one of my favorite examples, because there's no reason this movie should work at all. We know Charles de Gaulle was not assassinated. And yet you're so drawn, and you're drawn to Edward Fox because he's so good at his job. And you end up in this weird situation where you're rooting for him and Michelle Lonsdale at the same time. Like, it doesn't even make sense. And yet it's because they're both so proficient. And there's just something I think really compelling about it. It's why we watch sports. It's why, you know, I think we are compelled by anybody who exhibits a sort of extraordinary talent in a given field, and that's why I feel like you take all the stuff that Thackeray has that you have issues with, because he's really good at his job, and as you said, he's looking for new knowledge. He's looking for new knowledge that's going to save lives, and you know, his social skills are questionable.
yeah, but. The thing that really sort of struck me about watching this, and it almost took me back to Sex, Lies, and Videotapes, that sort of sense of there's no future and there's no past. There's only what's happening at every single moment. I mean, it's all about moment by moment in this. And I feel like, I wonder how much of that was you shaping that versus what the writers brought to it.
The great thing about having to move so fast was having the brain trust in the room. And sort of talking about it and going through it, there was just no time for anybody to, you literally had to leave your ego outside, because we were under such time pressure, meaning that when you have a group of people in the room who are trying to top each other, who are trying to find the best version of what it is, and everybody in the room is submitting to what it needs to be, and is putting the thing up here, then it's fun, and it's also, you get a good result. I mean, look, the creative core of this piece was on set all day, every day. There wasn't a single aspect of anything that wasn't looked at very closely. We would have discussions about whether or not a certain character should use a contraction in a sentence. Because to our mind, for a certain character, there's a big difference between saying can't and cannot. You know, that's how granular it was. And that was really fun, I thought. You know, everybody was paying very close attention.
But I mean, I was wondering that for you, since we're talking about this, Clive, because what makes this feel weirdly contemporary is not only that he's a contemporary character, but again, everything's happening with so much immediacy. And again, that's kind of exhausting to watch because Thackeray invests everything that's happening right in front of him with so much attention and so much passion that watching seven episodes, I just wanted to go to sleep.
I mean, that's a huge credit to the writers who, you know, have written it in that way. But it's also a huge credit to Stephen because, you know, I'm English. I've been brought up in a whole load of period projects where there's, you know, it can very often be very arch and very presented, and we're kind of watching. It almost feels like theatre. It feels like we're watching a presentation of another time, and you know, from the minute this thing starts, just it's to do with the way he's captured it is why you feel like that, and you feel it's present, it's visceral, because from the moment it starts, the choice of the music, the choice of the shots. It's visceral. It feels relatable to. It feels like something that's, you know, genuinely living, breathing, and happening. And we're not presenting something from the past. We are, as characters, living and breathing this. And that's the big difference between a lot of period things that I've seen.
Let me ask you a question about your casting, because we have some of your actors here. You've got terrific people. You know, you've got Andre and Juliet, who I know from the stage. And talk about casting and how you found these characters.
Well, yes. Carmen had a lot of work to do in a very short period of time, and the good news was we had freedom to go in any direction we wanted to go. So I was really relying on Carmen to present me with performers for whom this would represent a new opportunity. I wasn't really interested in anyone who had associations with this other kind of period piece, because I felt one of the things that we talked about a lot was, as part of trying to make it feel alive and present, was to dispense with any idea of a form of acting that suggests period. Now, you've got to find this balance where it doesn't seem anachronistic, but at the same time, we wanted all the dust to be removed from this idea of 100 years ago. So that was a conversation that we had as we started the process. And I tend to make decisions very quickly. I think for Carmen, there was a lot of work to do. I felt like, you know, from my standpoint, it went very smoothly, because I'm seeing the tip of the iceberg and basically going, yes. And she's doing all the excavation below the waterline. But as I said, it required everyone to sort of step in and into a very fast-moving stream and sort of stay calm while it all happened. And I felt mostly, as I'm sure you get this feeling too, for us, for the people that are here tonight, we fall into a rhythm and we get it. I always feel for a day player who shows up, who's got to play, you know, potentially a very significant scene, and we've been shooting for 30 or 40 days, and we're going at a certain, and this person's coming in, and they're brand new, and they have no idea what to expect or how this is going to go. My heart always goes out to them because that's so... Doing the job's
but,
hard
but
enough.
But we all had first days as well. Yeah. You know, there is an element of that. But no, it's true. The pace was... Yeah.
But well, since you bring this up, what was your first day like? I can see the fear in your eyes as you talk about it.
I can't remember what we shot the first day. What did we shoot the first day?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I can't even remember.
I don't remember the last day.
We hit the ground running.
But one of the things that's even sort of striking about it, too, is you were talking about this, the way the period movies are in quotations, they're all lighted in very modern ways. And the light sources here, I was just noticing, are very much the way you imagine rooms, with the exception of the operating theater. Most of those rooms don't have a lot of light in them. And so until we go outside, we don't really see that much light. And that must have been a very conscious choice for you to make, too.
Yeah, look, you're trying to find that balance. It is 1900. Not everything is electrified. The sources that do exist are not very powerful. You're trying to find this balance between giving the viewer a feel of what it must have been like to walk around during that period without them getting frustrated because they can't see anything. The good news is the new cameras, the new Red Dragon sensor is so insanely sensitive that we were... You know what was an interesting artifact of that? I didn't notice it until a couple of episodes in. I was in close-ups, I was noticing something different about everybody's eyes, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I realized we're shooting at such low light levels, at such a high ISO rating, people's pupils are blowing up like billiard balls. What's great about it is it's very emotive. Like it's a very arresting thing to see somebody's eyes. They look very alive and very sort of, because you realize, oh, in typical situations.
You lose eyes in the dark.
Yeah, well, yeah. And when you're in a typical situation with a normal amount of light, your pupils shrink. And that's kind of a less cool thing, you know. But that's just an unexpected sort of happy consequence of the fact that you can shoot at really, really low light levels now and get beautiful images.
Well, let's thank these guys for being here. Thank you guys all so much.
That was Elvis Mitchell, Clive Owen, and Steven Soderbergh talking about The Nick, which is currently on Cinemax. The Treatment is produced by me, Jenny Radelet, and mixed by Melissa Morton. Thanks to Film Independent at LACMA for the audio. And for more info and future screenings, check out filmindependent.org/LACMA.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.